Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. If you play games like checkers or poker, then you'll likely meet your match when you play against a computer programmed by Dr. Jonathan Schaefer. Using the science of artificial intelligence, he's got a line on all the plays you can possibly make. And gardens are moving up in the world, up to the rooftops. David McKillop and Kerry Ross are researching the potential for green roofs to conserve water and energy. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. The next time you play a game of checkers, be thankful your opponent is human. At least you'll have a chance at winning. Thanks to the work of Dr. Jonathan Schaefer, the computer now has the upper hand. Jonathan has finally cracked the checkers code and developed a computer program that knows your every move and has a strategy to beat it. The program is called Chinook, and it's just one of several games Jonathan has used to advance the science of artificial intelligence. His years of groundbreaking research has earned this University of Alberta professor a place in the Royal Society of Canada.
My research area is in artificial intelligence, and you can take AI and apply it to many important real-world problems, but ever since I was a kid, I've loved to play games, and I like to take my research and apply it to domains that I understand and are generally approachable to the public. And so games are an ideal testbed for exploring issues of computational intelligence. Many years ago, I started working on checkers. The original goal was, could we build a program that could play checkers better than a human? And the answer was yes, and in 1994, our program won the World Checkers Championship. It's the first program to ever win a human world championship, and I'm very proud of the fact that that's a record that is in the Guinness Book of World Records. I've continued that work on, taking it to the ultimate. Not only could we beat humans, but now we've built a program that is perfect. We have proven that checkers is a draw. If nobody makes a mistake, if neither opponent, black or red, makes a mistake, the game will end in a draw. So people are probably going to ask, who cares that we now know that checkers' perfect play is a draw? Well, that result in and of itself is interesting to a few people, but it's not a particularly profound scientific result. What we've done is push the envelope on the types of problems that can be optimally solved. When you take a look at a lot of scientific research, you see incremental advances. Somebody does something that's 10% better than what somebody else did, or they can now do it twice as fast or twice as big. I mean, those are nice, those are impressive advances, but they're incremental. The checkers problem is more than a million times bigger than any other optimal problem that has been solved. This is not an incremental advance. This is a huge leap forward. When I started work on this project, people thought I was crazy, and to be quite honest, with hindsight, I was crazy because I bit off something more than I could chew. And it started in 1989, and it's taken 18 years to do it, but having committed myself to do it, I decided to see it through, and it's been a long road to doing that. A million times bigger is absolutely amazing, and when you talk to my colleagues, they're just stunned. And the reason it's so important, it's important in many ways, but the most visible thing that's important is what it does is it's opened people's eyes as to what is doable today, that problems that people thought were just unapproachable in terms of solving, you can now say Schaefer did it. And I've already had talks with people who are saying, yeah, you know, my problem isn't quite as big as yours. I've never really thought about trying to solve it, but I think I can now. And I'm hoping that that's going to have a significant impact on the community.
You've done this with checkers, but you've also been working on poker, using that as some sort of a platform to work through things. How is it that you actually looked at these problems? What is it that you were trying to do as you worked your way through these?
What was I trying to do? I'm not sure what the right answer there is. One of the things that makes me different than most researchers is that I do breadth and depth. I can point to outstanding researchers who are world-class experts in a very narrow domain, and in that domain they've made advances. One of the things I like to do is say, here's an interesting problem. What does it take to solve that problem? I'm not necessarily interested in taking one aspect of the problem and saying, let's go and solve it. I'm interested in the whole problem, warts and all the different components of the problem. This was true for checkers. It's also true for poker. These are games that humans can play very well. What would it take to build a world-class poker-playing or checker-playing program? And it turns out that it involves multiple different areas, not just in artificial intelligence, but in other areas. And to solve an individual component in isolation of the big picture just seems silly to me. I mean, if I built a poker-playing program that could do one aspect of poker really well, well, then I would have a poker-playing program that really didn't play poker. If I can solve all of the issues, then I could build a program that really, truly could play world-class poker. And in the last few months, we've realized a dream. I seem to be addicted to long-running projects because this started in 1991. A master student, Dar Spillings, walked into my office and said, chess is easy, poker's hard. Let's do poker. And he's right. Poker turns out to be very hard, and it's a much more important experimental test bed than chess or checkers. Chess and checkers are games of what we call perfect information. You look at the board, you know where all the pieces are, you have all the information available for making your decision. Poker is a game of imperfect information. You do not know where the cards are. That means you have to do your decision-making process based on incomplete knowledge of all of the important aspects that should be going into the decision-making process. This is much more representative of the real world. Most of what we do on a day-to-day basis is based on decisions that we make without knowing everything. If I knew complete information about everything, I'd be a trillionaire. I could go to the stock market and I could bet on stocks and I'd know which are the winners and which are the losers. But we don't. We only have partial information. We know some information in the newspaper, or maybe we get hot tips, but it's partial information. We use that information, we do some assessment, and based on our best guess as to what's going to happen, we make an investment decision or non-decision. So incomplete information is much more representative of the real world. We use computer poker as a way of exploring these issues.
What does this tell you, then, about the way the human brain computes things?
I'm not sure it tells me very much. What we've discovered long ago is that there's two architectures for intelligence. One is the human brain, and another is a computer. And for many different aspects of intelligence, what is a strength for one architecture is a weakness for the other. Humans are very good, for example, at learning, vision, speech processing, artistic creation, which tend to be things that computers are very weak at. Computers, on the other hand, are very good at doing precise numerical calculations, repetitious calculations, memorizing gigabytes, trillions of pieces of information, which humans are very bad at. So when I look at a game like poker, what I quickly discovered is to play poker well is very easy for humans, but those skills turn out to be very hard to program in a computer. And that's why a game like poker is so challenging for researchers, is we just don't know the right way of solving this problem on a computer.
What's the significance of this then? What's it leading to? How is it going to be applied?
All the research that we do has real-world applications. The poker stuff, for example, has developed new techniques for reasoning in imperfect information domains. And there's one example which is very clear, and that is negotiation. Negotiation, for example, buying a used car, is a game of poker. And the used car dealer often misrepresent your situation. You're going to lie about how much money you're willing to spend, and the used car dealer is probably going to misrepresent the wonderful condition that this car is in. And you're going to go through this dance, and you're going to eventually, perhaps, agree on a price. It's a mini game of poker. It's all about reasoning with imperfect information. You know what your expectations for the car are. You know the dealer is probably going to try and misrepresent you or bluff, and you have to take that into account as you do your decision-making process. So there's an example where you can see that kind of technology being used.
Do you see a point in the future where we'd actually be blending artificial intelligence and human intelligence into, say, one organism? Or what would be cybernauts?
I'm not sure what the future lies in terms of technology, but one thing is clear is that human intelligence has strengths and it has weaknesses. Computer intelligence has strengths and it has weaknesses. And the two are complementary, and therefore some sort of symbiotic relationship which allows you to exploit the strengths of both is clearly better than just doing things individually. I can play, for example, a game of chess a lot better if I have a computer by my side to consult, right? And I think what we're going to see in the future is a greater increase in this kind of symbiotic relationship.
Aside from the checkers and poker, what else do you have on your plate?
We do a lot of research on commercial computer games. We work with BioWare, which is a local Edmonton company and is a world leader in developing role-playing games. We work with Electronic Arts, which is the world's largest computer games company. And we develop new artificial intelligence technology, some of which has shipped in their commercial products. You know, it's kind of nice when you... You do this kind of work. I worked on chess programs, and the only person who ever used my chess program was me. The checkers program certainly attracted a lot of interest. The poker program, it's been commercialized and has sold many tens of thousands of copies. That sounds impressive, but when you develop technology and it ships in, say, a BioWare product or an Electronic Arts product, something like that, millions of people buy it. So... that's really gratifying to know that you can make a difference that way.
You getting any royalties?
From the poker software, yes, because it does sell and it sells quite well. So it makes a great Christmas present. I think all of your readers should rush out and buy a copy.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Jonathan Schaefer, chair of the Department of Computing Sciences at the University of Alberta. He holds an iCORE chair in high-performance artificial intelligence, and he was recently inducted into the Royal Society of Canada. Imagine looking out the window of your office and seeing a lovely landscape of green leaves and flowers, or maybe even wheat. Wheat is just one of the plants growing on the rooftop of the Alistair Ross Technology Centre in Calgary. 2 years ago, Dave McKillop and his colleagues at Calgary Technologies, Inc. decided to experiment with a new environmental initiative. They call it a green roof. Green roofs are big in Europe and Japan, but they're just starting to make inroads into North America. The rooftop gardens are supposed to provide insulation, decrease runoff from storms, and reduce the heat island effect of cities.
Well, this is the Alberta Eco Roof Initiative, better known perhaps as a green roof. We have two roofs that we've built, and the environmental benefits have been proven in many other parts of the world, but Calgary's climate is unique.
Now, why did CTI get involved in this? What's it doing for you?
Three or four things. One is we put an initiative out a number of years ago in the environmental community saying, you know, we have a building. If you have an environmental project, come and talk to us about that, that needs a building. So the major one we have is the Green Roof Initiatives. The benefits potentially to us, one is it creates more green space, and it's attractive. It's in a spot that's visible from a plus 15, so you can see it. So we're creating some green space. It'll also reduce the heat loading on our building, which should reduce our energy costs. It'll extend the life of our roof. If anybody who owns a building and has to replace a roof can appreciate what that would cost. It also creates a quality of life and a community for our tenants. One of the major challenges that a lot of companies have is recruiting and retaining staff. And the elements that are very important to many of them is, you know, are they working in an environmentally friendly environment? And we've spent a lot of time reducing our environmental footprint. We have BOMA Go Green certification. We have green roof initiatives. We have a wind turbine on our south building. We've zero-scaped the front of the building. So many things to reduce our environmental footprint. And for a lot of people, that's very important. We've had lots of people who, you know, brought their families up here and their friends up here just to look at some of this stuff. So from a tenant recruiting perspective, you know, it's not going to be obviously the everything that is involved in recruiting and staffing, but it might just be the thing that somebody says, yep, you know, I want to go to work in a facility where they want to reduce their environmental footprint and they're doing a heck of a lot of stuff to do it. So that's part of what we're doing.
Do you have advice for other building managers or companies that might be interested in having their own green roof?
I could go on almost forever about that. There's a lot of interest in them. We seem to be running a tour every couple of weeks with building owners, building managers. Shell, for example, has been through here a number of times on taking a look at some of the initiatives that we have. We have Green Roofs for Healthy Cities, runs training courses through, and it's just starting to get some traction here. My quick suggestion is you know, figure out what you want, what type of performance you want from the roof. Why are you doing this? What are you attempting to accomplish? And then, you know, drill down on how you make that happen.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
That was David McAuliffe, manager of the Alistair Ross Technology Center in Calgary. The green roof was designed as a research project and is managed by Kerry Ross, an architectural consultant with the IBI Group in Calgary.
We're trying to first provide a demonstration that green roofs are viable here in Calgary and develop performance data for our climate region. Too often, green roofs are dismissed because they're considered something more appropriate for the Niagara-Toronto region or Vancouver, and less appropriate for a cold climate that's subject to Chinook winds and drying effect of the Chinook winds.
I take it you beg to differ.
I do beg to differ. I think we just need to find the right plant palette and the appropriate depth of engineered soil to make them work so that they're not only suitable for new buildings that can be designed to support a heavier load, but also retrofitted to existing buildings like the Alistair Ross Technology Center here.
Now, I'm looking at the plots before us, and actually, you're doing this as a research project, and you've got everything strung out in squares or plots, and there's a lot of different plants, including some wheat. How is it that you've got it set out so that you can collect your data?
Well, we have four different plots of four different profiles, two different engineered soil, that's growing medium, and first we thought two microclimates, an east-facing roof and a west-facing roof, which would be subject to different wind patterns. But now we're finding even more isolated mini-microclimates, which is becoming a study in itself.
What are some of the plants that you're using?
They're all native hardy drought-tolerant species, such as Jacob's Ladder, Kinnikinnick, Alpine Wild Strawberry, Blue-Eye Grass, Gallardia. There's I think, 8 or 9 flowering forbs, and then 3 native grasses.
The wheat that we're looking at here, it looks like it's ready for harvest.
It's winter wheat, so it's done its job in knitting the soil together. It was planted last fall and served to create a bit of friction and protect the final plants. We'll be taking the wheat off shortly as it has gone to seed and is ready to die off.
Now, what are some of the things that you're finding out? Because it has been a couple of years that you've been doing this.
Well, what led to some of our planting patterns was our initial build-out in 2005. We just seeded with winter wheat to hold the soil over the winter. And where we expected to see thicker, more vigorous growth in the 8-inch depth of engineered soil, which had full exposure to sunlight, was actually the inverse. It was in the 4.5-inch, the shallower substrate, which had more shade from the building. So we've created a planting pattern that has bars of native grasses, and we're finding some spots that things didn't do as well as expected, and others that are a bit of a surprise.
Now, when you say things didn't do as well as expected in some spots and others were a surprise, what happened there?
Well, in some of the grasses, for example, the grama grass, and this is something to watch for when you, in the first 2 years of establishment, some of the plugs had popped out of the ground through freeze-thaw action. Some people find that the birds sometimes can pull at them and pull them out of place. And that's exactly what happened, and we didn't have very many of the grama grass that were successful. And in talking with others, even in the Vancouver region, they've found grama grass on an exposed rooftop, hit and miss.
What about water and heat considerations?
There's a particular focus on stormwater mitigation through the use of green roofs, and a specialized group, Westhoff Engineering, has built a platform to further control and isolate runoff from two different growing medium versus a reference roof. And their research is just getting going. The equipment is being set up to measure how much water is retained and deferred from the stormwater infrastructure. What's the temperature of that water? And what's the quality of the water? Because that's all important to receiving waters and lessening the burden on the city infrastructure.
Now, one of the things you talked about was engineered soil. What's engineered soil?
Well, this isn't your average garden soil. This is specially designed to provide enough nutrients for the plants, but also to be considerably lightweight and to drain effectively. And there are various different blends depending on what type of plant species you want to grow, whether it's a prairie plant community or sedums.
Now, this is up on a flat roof of an industrial building. Is this something that I could adapt to my home?
Absolutely. It could be adapted to both a flat roof building or even on slopes. You need to be concerned with how are you going to retain the soil and the system on the roof when you're getting into a greater slope than 3-12 or 4-12.
Now, Carrie, you've built a green roof on your shed at home. What did you have to get together to do that?
Well, we worked with a local supplier who helped us put the membrane on properly and make sure that the flashings were built properly as well. We ourselves built the structural support and put the additional layers of filter cloth and drainage mat in place and mixed into the engineered soil some kind of a polymer that would help prevent the soil from slumping or sliding off the roof.
Now, is this something you can do on any roof, or are there special considerations? Do you have to reinforce it in some way?
The first stop is to check with a structural engineer and see if there's reserve capacity in the structure, the existing structure. Sometimes there is, and if not, then you're looking into reinforcing your structure, which for a lot of projects, that kills the initiative. But it wasn't the case here at the Alistair Ross Technology Center, happily so.
Now, you've become something of an evangelist for green roofs. Why is that? What do you see as being the real benefit of this?
Well, there's numerous environmental benefits, and I think Dave has come on to the reason that more and more people are coming out to see a tour of the roof is that it's much more attractive to look at green space out your window than a bare membrane roof. And anything you can do to make your building more attractive and more livable, especially as we push to densify your cities, is the direction of the future.
Certainly on a day like today when it's like plus 30 and we've had this on a continuous basis, what role would a green roof play in that?
Well, the green roof will keep the building cooler, and it does that in two ways. It shades the membrane, and then moisture in the substrate is taken up by the plants and further cools the roof. So there you're decreasing your reliance on air conditioning to keep the building cool. And also, in a macro basis, you're decreasing the urban heat island effect, which has become hot topics and very front and center in cities like Toronto, Montreal, Chicago, and Atlanta, which are having terrible troubles trying to keep the city cool enough and not max out their energy consumption during hot spells in the summer. There's also biodiversity, which is increasingly becoming a hot topic, to make sure that when we build a new building that we're providing habitat for urban creatures, and humans are one of those creatures. Possibility of creating open space and recreational areas on a rooftop, especially as we densify cities, which is the way we should be building and not spreading out our infrastructure too much. Building green roofs is consistent with the principles of smart growth to counter urban sprawl. Stormwater management, of course, that's every June, City of Calgary recognizes the importance of building low-impact development strategies such as green roofs and absorbent landscapes. There's almost too many to list at any one time, but it's a very interesting concept, and it's a viable one for here in Calgary.
Thank you very much, Carrie.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Carrie Ross, an architectural consultant with the IBI Group in Calgary. She manages the Green Roof Project at the Alistair Ross Technology Centre. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Ingenuity, the Alberta Conservation Association, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the University of Lethbridge, Genome Alberta, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Research Council, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.